sufficiency, resolve, and independence. We're going to look at Moses' example and some of the things that he encountered throughout his life. By no means is it going to be an exhaustive list. It was also something that I thought was quite beneficial in that it comes on the heels or really in the midst of the class that Nathan is teaching right now. So we don't have to really revisit all the times that Moses went to Pharaoh for the plagues. But one of the things that we're going to see is that when you're thinking about courage and what does it take to be a courageous person, and one of the things we're trying to instill within our young people is to be courageous in the midst of whatever situation they find themselves, is there has to be a sufficiency. There has to be something that is there that tells them that they do have the ability. They have the sufficiency to face whatever that obstacle is. And they also have to not only have that sufficiency and know that they have those things, but they have to make a decision. They have to give a resolute determination ahead of time to do that thing that they know they ought to be about doing. Tonight, we're going to look at developing our own faith. And one of the things that we're going to point out about that is faith gives the answer before the question is asked. That's what faith is all about, because faith is about promises. It's not about the flesh. And so faith gives the answer before the question is asked. Faith gives the reason. Faith gives the action before it's actually required. I have resolved that I'm going to do the will of the Lord. It doesn't matter what happens or what I encounter. I've resolved that this is going to be my reaction to that. And then independence. Independence does not mean independence from God, but it does mean that you do not have dependence on anything else. Too often what we see is that people become way too dependent on earthly things, and because of that, when there's a problem or a situation or something that demands courage, instead of going to God and having that sufficiency from Him, we want to have our independence from Him. And when we become too dependent upon fleshly things, that always becomes our answer, and it's according to the flesh, and will destroy the other two things that we've talked about. So in the story of Moses, what we see from the very beginning is that he had to face some feelings of inadequacy. That at the very beginning, and we saw this in if you read continually throughout Acts chapter 7 with the life of Moses, that in Exodus chapter 2, you have that Moses sees one of his fellow Hebrews being mistreated by an Egyptian. And he rises up and he kills that Egyptian. He murders him. And then the next day he sees a couple of Hebrews that are arguing with each other about something. And he goes to them to try to bring resolution to that. And they ask the question, the one who had done the wrong asked the question, "You're going to kill me like you did the Egyptian?" And Moses knew that the thing had been found out. And actually see that Moses was supposing that his own countrymen would see that God was going to deliver them through his hands. And because of that, he became afraid and he fled. And that feeling of inadequacy, that failure of the past, I believe is something that Moses, and reveals something about Moses that he probably had to deal with throughout his life. In Numbers chapter 20, you see that this is the second occasion where God instructs Moses to go to a rock. But unlike in the wilderness of Zin or Sin, he's in the wilderness of Kadesh. And here he's told, instead of striking the rock, he's told to speak to the rock. But Moses makes that statement, "See now here you rebels, shall we bring water from this rock for you?" And he takes the rod, he holds it up, and he strikes the rock twice. And God blesses the congregation with water, but Moses is told he can't go into the promised land because he did not believe in God at that time. And I think this reveals something about Moses, that Moses was the type of person that he had responsibilities that he knew that were placed upon him, but he was prone to take too much upon himself, or to grow impatient in the midst of those things, or angry. And Moses, later on, when he talks about this incident, he tells the story how God was angry with me because of you. And he says, "Because of you, I did this thing that was there." But he was held responsible for it. And what we need to see is that there are strong characteristics and traits that we all have that may be really, really good and beneficial in a host of different circumstances. But Satan has a way of taking your greatest strengths, your greatest abilities, your greatest virtues, and twisting them and turning them against you. And I believe that's what happened with Moses. Moses is said to be the meekest, the humblest man who had ever existed. But he's also the man who said, "Shall we bring water for you?" Putting himself on par with God, that he was the one who was doing this thing. He and God alone could do this when it was not his place. God is able to humble us in a way to where Satan is not going to be able to use that against us. But we have to understand that we all have failures. We all make mistakes. And no matter how much we think that we have put those things behind us, they have a way of creeping back in. I have talked to and counseled a lot of people, including myself, on the ideas that come along with anger and having hostility and feeling frustrated and the things that happen in the midst of that type of thing. And it does not matter how much you have tried to kill that old man and put him behind you, Satan has a way of reminding you of him every now and then. And when that happens, you need to be careful. Because it's real easy to confuse things like zeal for anger and wrath. Because wrath does not produce the righteousness of God, but God wants every one of us to be zealous. He wants every one of us to be angry and upset at sin, but He does not want us lashing out at our fellow man because of it. There's a very delicate balance that the Christian is supposed to walk. And though we've made mistakes in the past, does not mean that we'll ever be past those mistakes completely, but it does mean that we can have sufficiency. Because Moses would even use things for present excuses instead of just looking toward what it was that God was telling him to do. In Exodus 3 and 4, we have the account where Moses is at the burning bush. And when God tells him that he's going to send him back to the people to deliver them from the hand of the Egyptians, and the strong deliverance this was going to be, that Moses begins to give these excuses. Well, I don't know what to say because I'm not an important person. Who am I that Pharaoh is going to listen to me? I'm not someone of power or prestige. I'm not in a position of authority. I'm just a simple shepherd now. I'm not who I used to be. I don't know what I'm supposed to say, and they're not going to believe me anyway. It's going to be a futile effort. These people have been in slavery for 400 years, and now you want me to go back and to speak to them, and all of a sudden they're going to understand, and they're going to be delivered, and they're going to trust. I can't do such a thing as that, so please send someone else. I'm not eloquent enough to pull something like that off. But God had to remind Moses that he was the one. God was the one who had made man's mouth. And God was going to be the one that was going to give him the words to say. And God was going to be the one who was going to test these people to make them see and to understand who God was, to that he was going to be able to bring them out by a strong hand. And he was the one. Moses was the one that God had chosen to do this thing. And besides that, don't you have a brother named Aaron? Don't you have some of your brethren who can support you? Brethren, it's the same thing with us as well, is that we can feel like maybe I'm not important enough. I'm not a preacher. I'm not an elder. I'm not a deacon. I'm not some leader in the church that's prominent. And I don't always know the right words to say. But it's not about your words. It's about speaking what it is that God has to say. And people aren't going to believe me. That's not your role. Your role is not whether or not they believe you. Your role is to speak the truth. It's their role to believe. And it's their role to follow. And are you not surrounded by people who can support you and to help you in the midst of that? And so we shouldn't be looking at our past failures as a reason to not proceed. And we shouldn't look toward the excuses that we could make in our present for those things. But we should be like Paul was in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 10. That Paul had already said that he was least of all the apostles because he was one who persecuted the church. And yet God was able to use him, and Paul understood this. It's by the grace of God I am what I am. It's not because I was someone special. It's not because I was so eloquent. It's not because I was someone who the people were automatically going to believe because of who I was. Paul just simply said, by the grace of God I am what I am. And every one of us are what we are today because of the grace of God. No matter where we are at, no matter how much we've grown, no matter what stage we've reached, we can accomplish what it is that God would have us to accomplish. And so one of the things we need to be teaching our children is you have to have the ability to face your inadequacies. Have the courage to say, yes, I am not as strong as others in these areas, but it doesn't matter because this isn't about me. It's about what God is able to do and what God is able to do with someone even such as I. And that's our role, and that's our responsibility. But not only that, but courage to deal with criticism and pressures that he would face. You remember in Exodus chapter 10, you have during the ninth plague that Moses and Pharaoh have this last encounter face to face between the two of them. And after Moses has went before Pharaoh numerous times, and this is the most powerful man in all the world at that time. It's the world power. It is the empire. This is the man who's in charge of it. And this man is looked upon as being a god himself. This is the most powerful leader in the world. And Moses has went before him numerous times that this is what God says. And Pharaoh has completely refused it. And even after the other eight plagues that they've already been through, he still has not learned, and yet his heart has become harder and harder through the process. And then on this occasion, Pharaoh even says to Moses, "If I see your face again, you're a dead man." And Moses said, "Well, you've well spoken, because you will not see my face again." And he departs from him. That is some strong opposition. And even after they leave Egypt and they get to the brink of the Red Sea, Pharaoh's army is in hot pursuit of them, threatening to kill him once again. And not only from Pharaoh, but even from his own brethren. In Exodus chapter 5, you have that Moses has told Pharaoh that God has said, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh says, "Well, you're just trying to be idle. You're just trying to get out of work. I'm not going to let you go. Matter of fact, I'm going to make it worse on you. I'm going to withhold the straw, but you still are supposed to make the bricks. Just as many bricks as you were before, but I'm going to withhold the straw from you. Because obviously, if you're hatching such a scheme as this, you've got too much time on your hands." And so the people get angry. Not with Pharaoh, with Moses. And they go to Moses, and they get angry with Moses because he's the mouthpiece of God. And that's how that usually happens. "You trying to kill us? You have brought the wrath of the Egyptians upon us by preaching to them the truth. We're going to have opposition throughout our lives." In Numbers 14 and verse 4 is just another example of them becoming angry with Moses and really with God. And it's one of numerous times where they complain and murmur. They even get so angry at times that they want to take up stones and stone Moses. There are times where they're wanting to say, "Look, let us kill Moses and appoint for ourselves another leader who will take us back to Egypt." In the 55th Psalm, it's a heartbreaking psalm where we're reminded of something. And what we're reminded of in that psalm is that there is no worse encouragement or discouragement that you will ever face than the discouragement you get from brethren. It's one thing for Pharaoh to not believe. It's one thing for Pharaoh to come down hard on God's people. But when your own brethren are the ones who do it, there is no worse hurt. Because your brethren should know better. God is trying to deliver you. God is trying to give you His grace, His mercy, His freedom. And yes, as this is what we studied in our class tonight, yes, it's going to be hard and be difficult. In many ways, it's going to be harder on you to serve God than it will be to serve the Egyptians. But see, we are people who do the hard thing, not who settle for the easy thing. We're not like water. And the rivers are shaped the way that rivers are, crooked with all these twists and turns and bends, because they follow the course of least resistance. As the people of God, we are the kind of people that do not go to Pharaoh and for Pharaoh to say, "Well, let's do this." And we say, "Well, yeah, that's a good compromise." We're the kind of people who say to the world, "Get out of the way." Because our God has said. Courage moves things. Courage does not move out of the way of things. And what we want to teach our children is that when they're doing the will of God, you don't bend, you don't break. But understand this, the most discouragement you're going to get are from the ones who are your closest companions and friends in the church, oftentimes. You don't listen to those voices. You listen to the voice of our God, and you listen to the voices of those who listen to our God, because those are the ones worth heeding. We refuse to compromise. In Exodus chapter 8, there's just a few examples. And notice how this progression is. Exodus chapter 8, verses 25 through 27. Exodus 8, verses 25 through 27. Again, what they were asking of Pharaoh was that they may go out a 3 days journey to sacrifice to God. Pharaoh calls for Moses in Exodus 8, verse 25, and Aaron, and says, "Go sacrifice to your God." But notice he says, "In the land." Moses said, "It's not right for us to do so. This is making us an abomination. We can't sacrifice animals, which Egyptians worship, in the land of the Egyptians. It's going to make us an abomination. And besides that, it's not what God has said." Instead, verse 27, "We will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God. as He will command us. He didn't compromise. You see in chapter 10, verses 8 through 11, plagues have happened. Pharaoh is wanting some relief. Chapter 10, starting at verse 8. So Moses and Aaron were brought again to Pharaoh, and he said to them, "Go serve the Lord your God." Then he asked, "Who are the ones who are going?" Moses says, "We will go with our young and our old, our sons, daughters, our flocks, our herds, we will go." And then Pharaoh answers in verse 10, "The Lord had better be with you when I let you and your little ones go. Beware, for evil is ahead of you. Not so. Go now, who are men, and serve the Lord, for that is what you desired." And so he tries to use his own words against Moses. And Moses didn't compromise. Later in that chapter, verses 24 through 26, Pharaoh called to Moses and said, "Go serve the Lord. Only let your flocks and your herds be kept back. Let your little ones also go with you." So now, yes, we will let the little ones go. We will let your families go, but not your animals. Again, Moses did not compromise. He did not bend. Paul had to say on occasion, "We did not yield to them even for a moment." Brethren, there are some things that we cannot compromise on. When it's a matter of opinion, when it's a matter that does not matter, yes, we can do that all day long. But when it comes to a matter of truth over error, brethren, we cannot give an inch. We cannot give quarter. We cannot give safety. We cannot make someone feel comfortable and okay with that. It's not okay. And with Pharaoh, the most powerful man in all the world at the time, looked upon as being a god, who says to Moses, "This is what you said. This is what you meant by what you said." Moses did not compromise because it's not what the Lord said. I don't care what Pharaoh thinks about the thing. As we said, courage means you move. And when it comes to what God has said, brethren, we tell those who are opposed to it, no, you move. You have to move on that issue. I'm not moving on the issue of baptism. I'm not giving quarter on that. I'm not giving quarter to the ideas that come along with worshiping our God. We live in the midst of a society right now, even among many brethren, who are trying to compromise on the use of musical instruments in worship. Is that really what he intended or what he meant? How many times do you hear people say, well, Paul, when he was talking to 1 Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 14 about women not taking these leadership roles in worship to our God. Well, you know, Paul was a male chauvinist is one of the things you hear. But another one is Paul was only intending that for the Corinthians, not for people of all times. And people are willing to compromise on things like that. Brethren, you can't. And even as we talked about last week, there are things that we just simply cannot compromise on. Truth is truth, regardless of who believes it, regardless of who follows it. And as it was with Moses, when he went before Pharaoh, was not someone who was going to be afraid. It says that by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. If we want to teach our kids to be courageous people, they have to be able to do that by faith. And as we'll see tonight, it has to be by their own faith, not by the faith of their parents. The people who lived through the days of Joshua, they were faithful so long as they lived in the days of Joshua and the elders who served with Joshua. But when that generation died away, there went the faith of the people. With Moses, the same type of thing can happen. And with us today, the same type of thing will happen. We have to teach our children to be standing on their own faith, that they be courageous. That's the only way they cannot be fearful. And they have to do it this way. I'm not going to look to the things of the flesh, the things that I see, the things that I can touch and put my hands on right now. I have to look forward to the promise that God has made. And that's how Moses was able to do it. And because of that, he became the great leader that we have before us. And one last thing is that the courage to stand for freedom over independence, or dependency rather. The people loved the free bread. They loved it. That's what they wanted. In Exodus 14 and verse 12, and also Numbers 11, verses 4 through 8, you see examples of the people in having this bread that the Egyptians were given to them. The onions and the meat, the pots that were full of meat every day. Bread enough and to spare. We remember, they told Moses, when we sat in Egypt and ate bread freely. And they sung the praises of Pharaoh and Egypt. And the ones that held them in bondage and treated them spitefully and used them for their own advantage. And they sung the praises. And people have not changed. In John chapter 6, you see the same thing with Jesus, that he had just fed the 5,000. They come back the next day, Jesus refuses to feed them. And he says, because you have your bellies full of the bread, but you didn't see the miracle. Well, aren't those two the same thing? Jesus made a miracle, fed all them and filled all their bellies. And Jesus said, and they saw the miracle. And Jesus said, because your bellies are full, not because you saw the miracle. Well, those are the same thing, right? No, they're not. And that's where we see the difference between a carnal and a spiritual mindset. That miracle was not done so that they could have their bellies full. That miracle was done so that they might see who Jesus was. It was not for the benefit of their flesh, it was for the benefit of their soul. And Jesus had to teach them that no one comes to the Father unless comes to me unless the Father who sent me draws him. And the way that that happens is through the Word, not through bread. We have people in our society even today that because of the free things that are given will sell their souls. What is the promise of the things that I want and that I need? I saw posted on Facebook this past week that a lady who had been withdrawn from a congregation. And she was withdrawn from because it said in the letter she had not been to services in quite some time. And also she had been living with a man who was not her husband. And so she posted on Facebook and all these other sources. And then you begin to read the thread of all these different people that were talking about this situation, about this thing. And then in the midst of that, somebody said, yeah, you know, that's how the Church of Christ is. You know, they were all about me giving their tithes, my tithes, but they weren't about and listed all the offenses. Nobody stopped to say, you weren't part of a church that belonged to Christ when you're using a word like tithes, because that's not what's practiced there. But people were talking about how it was that they should have done these things for you. But nobody was saying you should have moved out of the house of the man that was not your husband. And people were saying when you go to worship, it's supposed to make you feel good about your relationship with God. But nobody was telling her you should have felt bad about your non-existent relationship with God. They were saying the duty of those elders were to shepherd you and to feed you and to make you feel secure. But nobody was saying those elders were right in saying we're going to withdraw from you and mark you and tell someone else, don't even eat with you. Brethren, we have to understand that as we get older and our generation passes away, that these young people are going to take those roles on. And if they have not been taught courage to not compromise, to stand for what is truth, and they're only about making people feel better about where they are at, the Lord's church will not grow. And we're not talking about numbers. What we are talking about is faith. And when we teach real, genuine faith, when we stand for what is right without apology, with all the love that we're supposed to give, but most of all, our love to our God first and foremost, that's when the Lord's church grows the way it should. And that's the kind of courage it's going to take. But if you make the decisions for people, if you tell people this is what you're going to do, this is what you're going to say, this is how you're going to behave, if we, as 1 Peter tells us, are not supposed to do as shepherds, to lord it over the flock, not only is it bad for us as leaders, but it's bad for you, because that is not the freedom that Jesus promises in John chapter 8. Those people thought they were never in bondage to anyone. Had they forgotten Egypt? Had they forgotten Babylon? Had they forgotten Assyria? Had they forgotten all these other nations? Or did they really not see that they were in bondage? And Jesus has to remind them, if you are bound to sin, if you're going to give in to sin, you are a slave to sin. The only way for that to happen is to get you off of the dependency that you have upon others. You cannot rely upon the free bread that the flesh provides or promises. You cannot sustain yourself by allowing me as a preacher, or me and Charlie as elders, or someone else that's a spiritual leader in this congregation. You cannot get there by your dependency and your reliance upon your spouse or your parents. You have to get off of that and learn how to get there on your own. And the reason being is because all the world may forsake you. And in the end, it's going to be you that's standing before God. It does not work whenever we're dependent upon others. That's why we're promised so many things every so many years. It's just to get you dependent. That's all it is. God is saying, I'm going to be with you. God is saying that heaven's going to be your home. But it's a lot easier to get that promise that I want, the thing that I want accomplished right now. And it never works. It never, ever works. Philippians 2 and verse 12 tells us this, therefore, my beloved brethren, as you have obeyed, not in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. You work it out. It is your salvation. You work it out. No one else can work it out for you. Paul says, you obeyed in my presence. That's great. But now much more in my absence. That's the real test of obedience. Were they being obedient to Paul? Were they being obedient to God? We have some, you know, college students in from time to time. If this is the only time you're going to church, if you're a spring break or summertime church attendee, don't think that's going to get you to heaven. You're relying upon somebody else's faith. You're dependent. And that's not right. It is God who's supposed to work in you, both to do and to will for His good pleasure. And that's the kind of faith that sustains you. That's the kind of faith that gives you courage. That's the kind of faith that can go before the most powerful person in all the world and say, no, we're not moving, Pharaoh. You are. Because our God is a lot more powerful than you. He's a lot more important than you. That's the kind of courage that helps us to face that demon of the past and say, yes, I know I've made my mistakes. I know what I'm prone to do, and I know how Satan may try to use that against me. But let me say to Satan the same way, get out of the way. My God is more powerful than you. My God is stronger than you. And you cannot promise me anything on this world that I'm going to turn my back on God for. You tried that with the Son of God Himself, and He didn't do it. And He overcame by just simply using the Scriptures. And I can do the same thing. I'm not an eloquent person, but I know what the Bible has to say. I'm not an important person, but I know how important I am to my God. That's what faith is about. And that's the kind of faith that gives us courage and strength. And God help us as we try to teach our young people that. And so this morning, that's the question I'm going to leave you with, is what are you afraid of? You know, if there is something that you're having trouble facing, if there's something that you feel inadequate facing, maybe it's that you're afraid that you're not going to be able to make it as a Christian. If you rely upon yourself or others, you won't. But if you will trust in your God, if you have faith in Him, if you believe in what He has said, you can make it. And heaven can be your home. Not just by the skin of your teeth, but as Peter says, an entrance can be supplied to you abundantly. God's going to test you. He's going to try you. He's going to put you through it so that all that dross, all that bad stuff can be worked out of you. But God will help you get to that promised land, the same as He did with Moses and the other children of Israel. And so if you're subject to the invitation this morning, if there's something we can do to help you in any way, please come as together we stand and sing.